Thanks, Mike. And while I'm handing these out here, do you need another one? Okay. Sure, that'd be great. Mike, I especially appreciate in your prayer there, you talked about growing the children up into the church of tomorrow. And I'll commend all of you because I see that as a strong focus point in this congregation. It's one of the things that was attractive to us when we were visiting is how much focus there is on making sure the children grow up and learn all the finer points. It's really important. We're going to be in 2 Corinthians 10 mostly, but I wanted to recap a few things just for context sake. Do the Corinthian Christians exhaust anyone else besides me? It is mentally exhausting sometimes to study about these folks, and I know that I have this tendency sometimes when I'm looking through everything that's going on in Corinth, and I think, well, at least we're not that bad. And I think that's probably a dangerous proposition to think that way, because there are so many things wrong in Corinth, but there are things that are going on there that go on amongst us as well, and we have to be honest with ourselves and be introspective, and the letter is here for us as well. We need to learn from what's going on and these character flaws and how to overcome them. But again, it's important to understand who the letter is written to, and where Paul's coming from and talking to them and the original message, and then looking inward to ourselves and what can we pull out of this that's for ourselves. And that's where we'll end today. So be thinking about that as we go through chapter 10. What is the message for us today? Besides what it was for the first century Christians, what is it for us here in Missouri in the 21st century? Ben did a good job a couple of weeks ago. Whatever chapter we were in there, we needed to go back and think about who are these people we were talking about. And we kind of, checked off some of these character flaws that they had. And we talked about, summing up their character in one word. Ben's word was pride. That was a good one. Someone else in the class threw out arrogant, I think. The word I think of is selfish. I think these are all good one-word sum-ups of the character flaws there and all of the problems that stem from them. Dividing into cliques, demeaning each other, regarding something as little as which preacher is preferred. They're dividing up into cliques over this, right? They're stepping on each other. They're interrupting each other in the assembly. They're valuing some people more than others based on different things, even cultural and ethnic background. They're preferring one another. They're ignoring egregious sins within the body. Sexual immorality is called out. They're just letting it happen. And all of these things stem from this. There's so many things going on. I put this list together at some point in the past just to help me get a better picture of what's going on in Corinth and characterize all these flaws so that I could really see what all is going on. There's misunderstanding of the core of Christianity. There's lack of discipline and respect, lack of concern for one another, divisions, impatience, ethnic and cultural background differences that they let get in the way. spiritual gifts. I'm more valuable because of the gifts that I have over you. And chaotic assemblies interrupting each other. All these things that are going on. Since that first letter was written, have things gotten better in Corinth? What do you think?
Somewhat.
They
corrected something.
Yeah, I think so too. You look like you want to say something, Karen? Okay. Yeah, I think so too. I think things have gotten a lot better. We've seen evidence of that through 2 Corinthians so far in the letter. But there are still a few things that Paul needs to talk about. One of them, I think, still stems back to this divisiveness, and that's the crux of 2 Corinthians, because Paul's having to defend himself as an apostle, as someone who has authority, and this goes back to first chapter of 1 Corinthians, well, I think Apollos is better. I think so-and-so is better. I don't like Paul. I don't like how he speaks. And that's still there. Another one, and that's, of course, most of the letter, and then sprinkled into the letter, we have two other pieces I think it's chapter 2 or 3. Look back in 2 Corinthians. Is he's got to underscore this love for one another that's not there, that's at the root of things. That love for one another that's not there. And then last week, as we finished up chapters 8 and 9, and Paul did a fantastic job leading us through that discussion, it's all about generosity, right? It's a basic root character flaw that these folks have that they need to be pointed out. You need to love one another, you need to have a generous heart, and you need to be united together. These are the things that haven't kind of... They may have dealt with the immoral brother. They may have dealt with the spiritual gifts problem. They may have dealt with waiting on each other at the Lord's Supper, it seems. But they haven't dealt with some of these underlying issues that are in the letter. So that's where we arrive here at chapter 10. I just want to close out that discussion of where we are and how we got here. Any last comments on, you know, where we ended 8 and 9 last week with generosity? Yep, Dorian?
Just before you get off the general stuff, do you think they had an elder set?
I don't know. If
there's no indication.
No. If they did, I think maybe Paul's talking to them too, because they're...
No one qualified. Maybe.
Yeah. I've never asked that question before, Dwayne. It's a good question. But just thinking out loud, I would think if there were elders, I would think Paul would have called them out directly for not doing their job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it? We couldn't hear his question.
Oh, Dwayne was asking, do you think the church in Corinth had elders at the time? Interesting question. Any other thoughts?
I was just going to make a comment kind of in the generality of... falling back into their cliques and things. I know in my life, I've made an effort to reach out to people and try to broaden horizons, make friendships and things. And sometimes if that's not well received, it's very easy for us just to fall back into what is familiar, what flows easily. Someone that you can just sit right down with and pick up where you left off in the conversation from a month ago. And it very much could be the same thing here. They have corrected some of the things that they were having issues with, but as humans, we often go for easy, and so it's easy for us just to go back into what we knew.
Right. And I think one other point, building a little bit on that, have you ever noticed that the First Corinthian letter that we have is specifically addressed to the church in Corinth, and it gets very specific about their problems. But the letter we're in now is not just addressed to the church in Corinth. It's addressed to all the saints in the Achaean area. That's Athens, Sparta, Olympia, the whole southern Grecian peninsula. So these basic character flaws now, maybe they were there before, but they have seeped out of Corinth, and they're infecting the other congregations around. So it's becoming a big problem. Maybe some things were solved, but these root things need to be dealt with because they're getting out there and infecting more of the brothers. Okay, let's turn to chapter 10. Paul returns then, after talking about the heart of generosity, returns again to the defense of himself and giving reasons for discipline and what's wrong in Achaia itself, and the reasons why he has authority to tell them that they're wrong in some of these areas. So let's read through that, in a minute. Let's talk about theme real quick. Within the context of that, defending himself and the way he communicates, and we'll see that, I'm going to propose that a theme throughout chapter 10 is actually speaking the truth in love, even though those words aren't used here. But I want you to think about that throughout chapter 10 as we read it. And before we do that, let's look over at Ephesians chapter 4. Because Paul does use those words over here in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 14 and 15. And let's just talk about what speaking the truth in love actually means. Before we read it, what have you heard some say that speaking the truth in love means?
Oftentimes we hear it spoken of in dealing with someone's sin. We speak the truth of their sin, but we do it in a loving manner.
And what do you mean by that, James? In a loving manner.
Don't beat them about the head and neck.
Don't beat them about the head and neck. I've heard that as well.
What's that?
I've heard that as well. I've heard that a lot, as I suspect many of us have. But the question this morning, as we read Ephesians 4, is that phrase is used here by Paul. What does he actually mean? So let's read it really quick. Dwayne, you want to read that? 14 and 15 of chapter 4.
14 and 15. That we no longer be children, tossed to and fro, carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things unto him who is the head, Christ.
What are your thoughts on that, Dwayne?
Well, I think he's really showing them how much love. Love is the second. Love one another is the second commandment of the greatest commandments. And I think that if love is missing, just like in the church at Ephesus in the Revelation, they were very good at teaching and stuff, but their love for one another, they lost it. They lost their first love, and by doing that, their candlestick was removed. That church was written off. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I think that Paul was just trying to say, you know, we've really got to work at this. We've got to equip the saints. And this is a big responsibility of elders of the church. You've got to equip the saints so that they can work out the ministry and edify the body of Christ and come to a unity, as this verse says.
Okay. Great, Dwayne. Jason?
Speaking the truth in growing up, which is the whole context of the verse, growing up is just not just about the other person. It's about me as well. That's why if I open the Bible and my intent to do so is to prove somebody else wrong, you know, we're all children. Whether we're children ingesting meat or children ingesting milk, we're all children together. So we're all growing up. So the purpose of speaking the truth in love is so that we grow up together. We have a fellowship. It's not, you know, ministering, even in and of itself, is not me telling you what you should believe. It's, hey, let's look at it together and learn together.
Okay. James?
In this section here, it's talking about using our gifts. And it from these two verses, it sounds like what he's saying is addressing the gospel in its full entirety of Christ being the center, not being tossed to and fro by doctrine, not by the cunning craftiness and deceitfulness of men, but just lay the truth out there as God intended it from his word and grow from that point forward.
All great answers. Ending where you talked about, James, there, just putting the truth out there and let happen what happens, the reason for doing that is not, I mean, truth is truth, and we should always want to speak truth. But sometimes people come across the wrong way when they just want to speak truth just because it's true, and they don't care about the person, right? I think that's the heart of what we're getting at here. And Dwayne mentioned, right, the second commandment, love one another, right? And that's the agape love, right? This is not because we're family, because you're my brother, because you're my friend. No, this is because you're a human being, and you have intrinsic value from the Creator. And because you have that, and I'm commanded to love you for it and respect the value you are as a human, then I must tell you the truth because your spirit and its eternal destination is at stake. That's speaking the truth in love. That's bringing all those comments together. That's what this is. It's not browbeating, though. Good arguments could be made that not browbeating people over the head with the truth is a good way to do it. But that's not really the intent. The intent is, I must tell you the truth because I care about where you're going to end up.
It's just like God's love for us.
Right.
Right. Love. And we're supposed to emulate that love.
God's doled out plenty of tough love, hasn't he?
And of people that hate him.
Yeah.
All people. He loves all people. And we need to learn that.
Yep. So let's, as we think through chapter 10, let's think about speaking the truth in love. Just to close that out, I would point back to, the father and son sharing the woman in the 1 Corinthian letter, right? And no one was doing anything about it. Was anyone showing that boy any love? No. In fact, they were despising him because they were ignoring his sinful state, showing the truth in love. So Paul's compelled to show the truth in love, and I think that comes through in chapter 10 as we read this. Let me get back over here. Now I, Paul myself, urge you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, I who am weak, who am meek when face to face with you, but bold toward you when absent. I ask that when I am present, I may not be bold with the confidence with which I propose to be courageous against some who regard us as if we walked according to the flesh. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. And we are ready to punish all disobedience whenever your obedience is complete. You are looking at things as they are outwardly. If anyone is confident in himself that he is Christ, let him consider this again within himself, that just as he is Christ, so also are we. For even if I should boast somewhat further about our authority, which the Lord gave for building you up and not for destroying you, I shall not be put to shame. For I do not wish to seem as if I would terrify you by my letters. For they say, his letters are weighty and strong, but his personal appearance is unimpressive and his speech contemptible. Let such a person consider this, that what we are in word by letters when absent, such persons we also are indeed when present. For we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves, but when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding. But we will not boast beyond our measure, but within the measure of the sphere which God apportioned us as a measure, to reach even as far as you. For we are not overextending ourselves as if we did not reach to you, for we were the first to come even as far as you in the gospel of Christ, not boasting beyond our measure, that is, in other men's labors, but with the hope that as your faith grows, we shall be within our sphere enlarged even more by you, so as to preach the gospel even to the regions beyond you, and not to boast in what has been done accomplished in what has been accomplished in the sphere of another. But he who boasts, let him boast in the Lord. For not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends. All right. There's a lot of meat in there.
Yeah.
So let's...
He uses the word we a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that include all of us, or was it that just him and the apostles at the time? Or?
My opinion is that he's including his whole crew that travels with him, and oftentimes he switches, and when he's talking about apostolic authority, he's including himself along with the apostles in a we. Yeah. Let's head back to the beginning of the chapter. Look at some of the questions here. How does Paul's presentation in person contrast with his writing? Yeah, and I think he would agree with it. Malachi?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say meek and gentle, or a bit person, maybe a little bit more bold, a little more abrasive.
Okay. Malachi?
In his presence, he's meek. The meekness is having the authority or power to do something, but refraining from doing so.
Right.
But when he's absent, that meekness isn't as present, and he uses the authority that's been given to address the issues
okay.
that are springing forth in the congregation.
Yep. Jason?
We get the impression that physically he wasn't a very dynamic specimen, that if somebody was to see him speaking to them, in a way they might kind of, that guy's just talking. He didn't really give a strong presence physically. But in his words, in his letters, he came across very dynamically.
Right. Yeah, so meek in person, restrained in person, but bold in his writing. Probably not the greatest speaker in the world, as Mike said. I think Paul would agree with that. It's not his not his forte.
He seems to have some eye problems. We have a record of that, that he has some eye problems. Well, I have eye problems too. And it really kind of puts you off balance. And I would think that's part of his speaking ability.
Yeah.
And direct person to
person. Yeah. I think there's even a little more to it than this. And I may be reading in a little bit more, so this is may just be me. But if you look back at chapter 2, this isn't the only time that Paul talks about this, but it's an example I would bring forth. Chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, he's talking about the sorrow that these brothers are causing him. I determined this for my own sake, that I would not come to you in sorrow again. For if I cause you sorrow, then who then makes me glad but the one whom I made sorrowful? And this is the very thing I wrote to you, lest when I came I should have sorrow from those who ought to make me rejoice, having confidence in you all that my joy would be the joy of you all. When Paul goes to see these brethren, they're special to him. He taught them the word. They're like his children. And when he goes to see them, he wants it to be a joyous occasion. He wants to just, put it in 21st century terms. He wants to hang out, eat dinner, maybe play some board games, and have a good time with his brethren. He wants to fellowship. That's why he's writing to them, to straighten them out before he comes. Because, as he says here in chapter 10, verse 1, I who am meek, restrained when I'm with you face to face, I'm bold to you when absent. I don't want to have to do that. I think this is part of Paul's personality. I know it's, maybe I identify with it is why I see it. I don't like face-to-face confrontations. I know that the truth needs to be said. But it takes a lot of courage, and it's not my forte to go one-on-one with someone and speak boldly. It can be done from afar. And I think I identify with Paul a little bit like that. He wants to have a good time with his brethren when he's there. And that's part of why he's meek. Yeah, James?
I kind of look at this like a grandparent relationship. The grandparents do not want to be the ones that have to discipline. They want to be there with the grandkids and get to enjoy all the good things that comes from having grandkids. They don't want to have to be the one that whips them because they did something they're not supposed to. And it's just the way it comes out to me. That may not be an accurate assumption, but it makes sense to me that you raise your children and you're letting them raise their own. So you just want to be there to enjoy the good parts of it. And Paul is saying that here. I want you to get all this stuff straightened out before I get there because I just would like to enjoy the fellowship with you.
That's what I think too, James. Yeah, well said. Any other thoughts there?
But Paul knew they lived in the real world too.
Yeah.
Just like we do.
Yep. Yeah. It can't be ignored.
The variation between Paul's writings and Paul's speech surely was intentional. Maybe not intentional by Paul, but intentional by God. Paul was inspired when he spoke and inspired when he wrote. When Moses doesn't want to speak on behalf of God to Pharaoh, what does God say? Who made your mouth?
Right.
So God could have made Paul a very eloquent speaker through the Spirit, but he chose not to. And I think that may be to help distinguish Paul from others, like what we read in Ephesians, where they were torn away by every wind of doctrine, by trickery. Like, there were people who were quick of tongue, and they were able to deceive people, but Paul wasn't that way.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it helped him stand out, and God did it intentionally. Whatever the reason, it's intentional that he was that way.
Yeah, that's a great point, Ben, and probably applies well to us, you know.
Two, what are our talents, right?
Is all talents infused within one person? No. You know, some people are good at one thing and not at another. But you capitalize on the talents that you're good at. And yeah, it's in God's plan for you to have those. Yeah.
It may right? be why, you know, we have examples that Peter seems to be a really good orator, right? I mean, Acts chapter 2, he's the one who spoke, or at least he's the one whose message we have. But, you know, we only got two letters from Peter. Maybe writing wasn't Peter's thing.
And short ones.
Yeah, right, they're short. But Paul, on the other hand, maybe speaking wasn't his thing,
right.
But writing was, and that's why we have so many letters from Paul. I don't know, I'm speculating, but that could be.
Yeah.
And another aspect of this is sometimes it's a lot easier for people to bear their heart or bear their thoughts on paper, because when you're face-to-face with something, then you're reading their emotions of what you have said and the interaction, and it may cause you to change what you're saying, but you can either be more forceful on paper because you're not taking in what's going on with them. I know writing notes to your spouse and vice versa, sometimes I can say things to her in a note that I cannot say in person because it's something that is weighty or something I need time to think about, and I want to make sure I say it right. So, and take the time to write it out, and that helps.
So,
I think what Ben was saying is really right, because just think of the percentage of the new covenant that Paul is inspired to write to us.
Right.
Much more than the other writers.
Yep. Definitely his strong suit. So, if writing is Paul's strong suit, what were those in southern Greece looking for in a person with authority? If it wasn't what Paul was offering, what were they looking for?
A demanding presence.
A commanding voice. It's Greece. What are the Greeks and the Romans as well known for? Great oratory.
Find something new, anything.
Yes, right. And orators that you could go study at the feet of. Great speakers. God sent the worst speaker to the great orators of the time to teach them the truth. It's fascinating, right? That's not what they were expecting. So what Paul spends most of this chapter answering this question. Answering back of why, you know, you're expecting the wrong thing. You expect a great orator, and that's who you're going to trust to inspire you and tell you what to do and that you're going to listen to. And that's not what you should be looking for. Here's what you should be looking for. Paul's answer to this. So verses 3 through 6. Bob, you want to read that again? We'll look at this first one.
For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, and being ready to punish all disobedience with your obedience when your obedience is fulfilled.
So we're talking about flesh versus something else here, and I should have included the first part of verse 7 right there, because it just comes out and says plainly what we're trying to say. You are looking at things outwardly. It's not about the physical. Think spiritually. It's completely different. That's the first blank on there if you're following along. Think spiritually. You're thinking all wrong. It's not about the man and how he can speak and grab your attention and use big words. Think spiritually first. In verse 5 and 6 that Bob just wrote there, God's truth shatters all the so-called educated, the scientific knowledge and thought of the day. I was in my bank of favorite verses, this one's in there. I love all of the scripture that talks about, that's so poignant still today. The world of academia and science is not where truth lies. It never has. The truth lies here. And it shatters, I love that language, the educated and scientific knowledge and thought of the day. And this kind of knowledge, which goes directly to what they were looking for, a great orator who can speak all the knowledge of today and science and sound educated and academic. No. The real truth shatters that. And it does something else. It's powerful. What does it do? It leads to something. In verse 6.
Obedience.
It leads to obedience. Right? Just knowing academia and science doesn't do anything for you. The real truth, the spiritual truth of the universe, does something to people's lives. It leads to obedience. Okay? Verse 7. If anyone is confident in himself that he is Christ, let him consider this again within himself, that just as he is Christ, so also are we. Just summing this up as he gets down to verse 7, outward persona does not dictate authority, because it's not about flesh and bone and your talents as a man or a woman and who you can talk to and convince and know things. It's not about that. That's not what dictates authority, and Paul's going to get to that. Let's see, verse 11. Let such a person consider this, that what we are in word by letters when absent, such persons we are also in deed when present. What's he saying there?
The authority I have in letter, I have in person.
Okay. Jason?
Refers to show them to be obedient?
That's the way I wrote it down, Jason. Yeah. Both great answers, but Paul recognizes he's a better writer than a speaker. He prefers to show how to be an obedient disciple of Christ. When he comes to them in person, he doesn't want to have to browbeat them or pretend to be gentle or, you know, however he would do it. He wants to just live like Christ would live and show them the example and have fellowship with one another. And so that's his reason for writing these words rather than having to say it when he gets there. Verse 12. Someone read verse 12 again.
For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves to those who commend themselves, but they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves among themselves are not wise.
What's really going on there?
Bottom line is that if you want to know how well you're doing, don't look at somebody else. Look at Christ.
There you go.
Look at Christ.
Look at Christ. I sum this up as, and the point is, the people in Greece are not comparing authority figures to Christ. They're comparing them to each other, right? In a fleshly way, a non-spiritual way. Paul has no need to put on airs or be the best in the room. It's not what he's about. He doesn't need to be the best one in the room.
Wasn't there also other people, maybe if they were false teachers would be the right word or not, but there was a group of people who were promoting themselves, maybe not from within the church, but infiltrating the church. And raising themselves up to, trying to raise themselves up to the standard of the true apostles in the church's eyes.
Right.
And say, we have this authority also. We have authority to teach and do these things, and you should listen to us. And they were comparing themselves among themselves. And Paul says, we're from God. We compare what we are to be with God's standards.
And that's exactly it is what's going on. Yeah. And he'll touch on that a little bit in 11. Clayton will get to that. You're teaching next week, right?
Yeah.
So we may have time for a verse there at the end that pulls this together. That's exactly right, Mike. Verses 13 through 16, where does authority come from? Someone just said it back here.
God.
Comes from God. right? It doesn't come from the approval of other men. God's.
Told in the 1 Corinthians 2nd chapter, he says, my speech and my preaching were not with persuasive words of human wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of the power, that your faith should not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God.
Great sum up. Right. Authorities from God. Paul was sent to preach the gospel to the Corinthians. God sent him. It's not Paul choosing to do it. God sent him. Ultimately, there in verse 17 and 18, Paul feels no need to be approved by the Corinthians. He's approved by God. And that's where his authority comes from. So that brings us to the end of chapter 10. There's a couple more questions just as we touch a little bit into chapter 11. Sorry, Clayton. Verse 6, and we'll just pick out a couple here because they tie back to what we're talking about here in chapter 10. If I'm unskilled in speech, yet I have knowledge, in fact, in every way we have made this evident to you in all things. What's the most important thing to Paul? What's more important than being a good speaker, I guess? It's the knowledge of God, right? And being able to share it in whatever manner he needs to be able to share it. If that's writing and that's living it out, then so be it. Okay. So ultimately, this goes to what you were saying, Mike, and it's there in verses 10 through 13 of chapter 11. Paul does talk about these false teachers, and that's why he feels the need to speak the truth in love, because these false teachers are coming around and promoting themselves as, you know, full authority of apostleship. And that's going to end in destruction of people's souls. And that's what he truly cares about. So we're out of time.
What kind of apostle or teacher would he be if he did not call that out? If he just let it go?
Right. One who doesn't love his fellow man.
That's right.
Right. So, in 1 minute left, I guess, last question. Overall, what's the message for chapter 10 for us today? Bring it home to how we can improve our behavior or our attitudes. Jason?
It's more important to be approachable than knowledgeable and scholarly.
Okay.
I would say whatever we do in word or deed, do it in love. And then I think that it also is a reminder, don't make comparisons to others, make comparisons to the standard.
Good.
The only wisdom that truly matters is the wisdom from God.
I wish I could be like Paul was and say, do as I do. When I was with you, I didn't take money, I didn't do this, you know.
Right.
Live my life in a way where I knew I was a good example.
Yep. Yeah. Great comments. Thanks, everyone.